right, so today is the first day of the fourth year, and we are starting with 269, which we, I think, according to my calculations, we ended with last year and said we're going to start with the summary. So I just wanted to discuss a little bit the concept of sanctifying the descendants of Aaron. So let's look at that mission, at that halacha for a minute, 269.
Esther, can you share with her?
I was just going to ask. Oh, the book? I didn't bring mine.
Okay, we're in volume 3, just so you know, for next time. So this is the precept of the sanctification of Aaron's descendants, which we began just as we ended off last year. So to consecrate the progeny of Aaron, in other words, to hallow them and enter them in the service of offerings. It's interesting because the way it says it in Hebrew, klamar lekadsham, to hallow them, ulhachnisam lekorban, to enter them to a korban. It might sound like they're supposed to be the korban, right, in that Hebrew.
Which would be a little...
Right, lahachnisam lekorban. Right. But so on the one hand, that sounds strange, and on the other hand, it just points out to us that we misunderstand the word korban, right? When we're thinking there, it means sacrifice or offering, it doesn't. It means close maker. That's my translation, as you've heard before, right? So it's their job to be the close makers, right? So we use the
to
korban.
Sort of enhance the relationship.
Right. Right. So, and that's exactly what I want to point out today. So, and we're supposed to give them precedence in every matter of holiness. And if they refuse anything of this, we're not to listen to them. So it's not up to them. They don't get the choice. We have to give them first pick, whether they like it or not, which is why they're called to the Torah first. They get the honor of benching first, right? I'm sure you've been at tables where people say, is anybody a Kohen? Right, they get to bench first, and they get precedence in other things. Really, technically, if we're standing online in the store and we see a Kohen, we should let them go in front of us. So they get precedence in holy things and in non-holy things. We give them precedence, we give them honor. And we're supposed to treat them more nicely than others. And it doesn't have to do with them. If they say, oh, it's fine, don't worry about it, it's too bad. You're a Kohen, you get this no matter what. So it doesn't have to do with them. So the question is, why do we do this? Why is this a mitzvah? Why did God decide he needed to create a priestly class altogether? What's the point of that? So it's discussed, actually, and I think for our second class, after we finish this other book that we're doing, we should start The Lost Light of the Moon by...
I'd love it.
Yeah, I think it's really
that.
Good, yeah.
Great idea.
So I think we should do that. But in that, so she discusses deeper sources for equality and talks about the fact, and I'm sure it's a... let's see, who does she quote? The Nefesh HaChaim. Who talks about that we should all be equal. That's really what we're supposed to be, but we're in a temporary state of inequality. So we have this hierarchical order of Kohen, Levi, Yisrael, most of us being Yisrael. What are you saying?
No. I was going to ask, so when you say everybody should be equal, what she's saying is as between the different tribes?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
There is supposed to be.
I wondered what the...
There is supposed to be equality.
You were talking men and women.
Men and women.
Actually, that too, which is why we're going to do that book.
Okay, yes. I just was wondering.
Yes, good, because there's a temporary inequality also between men and women, but it's temporary, and there is an inequality, but it's temporary. It's very long term.
I was going to say it lasts, lasting as long. Okay.
Very long term.
Ascendancy.
But, okay. Right.
Good. Okay.
Right.
Better going up than going down.
Right. That's, right. No, but there's a transformation in what's going on, which you can definitely see over the last 100 years and trending in history. The last 100 years is so qualitatively and quantitatively different than the last 2,000 years
Absolutely.
That were in a clear transition period. So that's what her book is about.
Okay.
But
I think you mentioned that book once before. It sounds familiar.
We can vote.
That's true. Which is huge.
Which is the state that gave the vote to women first? Does anybody know?
Wyoming.
Really?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I think I did
Wyoming,
know that.
Because their population is so low, they want to double their voter roster.
Right. January.
So they get more representatives.
January 2012.
So they mentioned suffrage in Wyoming first. Okay, that's pretty interesting.
Or recirculated
Which isn't where you would think. Necessarily.
Yeah. To reverse that?
He circulated a petition in his high school and it said, women suffer enough. Sign here to end women's suffrage.
Okay, That was thoughtful of them.
Yeah. Anyway, so there is supposed to be the ultimate equality, which is why in Simchas Torah and other times we dance in a circle representing that each point is equidistant from the center being Hashem, and we are all supposed to be equidistant. But meanwhile, we do have this hierarchical thing, and we do also have the difference between male and female today. It's a temporary state for a reason, though. So what's the reason? Why did Hashem create a hierarchy that precedes the equality? So the point of the hierarchy, just one of them, is that we all need to learn. We, as the chosen people, need to have among us a chosen people. That's really who the Kohanim are. Mm. They're chosen. So it's interesting to think about, at first, who was supposed to be the priestly class first, before the tribe of Levi was chosen?
Judah?
No, the priestly class.
The firstborn.
That's right, the firstborn.
Yeah, right.
How do you say firstborn in Hebrew?
Pidyon HaBen.
Oh, so Pidyon HaBen is the redemption of the firstborn. Right? The firstborn child is the Bechor.
Right.
How do you say chosen in Hebrew? Bachar.
Bachar, Bachar.
Okay. Bechor and Bachar. One's a chaf and one's a chet. But it sounds the same. Right? So the fact that it sounds the same, even though they're not spelled the same, does mean that there's something about them that we have to look at. What's the same in that?
What's the Bachar?
Bachar is chosen. With a chet is chosen, and Bachar with a chaf, like a Bachar, a yeshiva Bachar, a boy.
Oh, a Bach, okay.
A Bachar is a boy, but a Bachor is the firstborn. Firstborn. Uh-huh. So you have a Bachorah, feminine. Right, but a male firstborn is a Bechor. So the firstborn is a Bechor, a Bechorah. We are the Am HaNivchar, the chosen people, but we're also referred to as the firstborn of Hashem, the firstborn of the nations. The analogy is there, but wait a second. Are we the firstborn of the nations? Are we the first nation on the planet?
No.
No, there's other firstborn, there's other nations that were before us, so how are we firstborn? So there really is a relationship, where Hirsch points out a relationship between chosenness and
chosen.
Firstborn.
We're
chosen.
Yeah, right. Huh? Because
well,
we agree.
Way, we
okay, so there's that. That's about why, how we got chosen.
Yeah.
But what's the relationship between firstborn and chosen? Right? So
I'm
that's
just thinking how it was acquired.
Right. Okay,
how
so
did
that's
become that.
Well, we became it that. So the question is, what's the role? What is the role of the firstborn? Yeah, you may not be thinking this right now with your daughter at 16, but the role, are you the firstborn yourself?
I am. Okay. I know the role.
I am too.
What is the role of the firstborn?
You've lived it.
I get to tell everybody what to do.
Exactly.
The leader. Crazy, and I lead my
but I think it's
exactly.
I think it's I see, and it's funny because I'm also the firstborn, mm-hmm. and I didn't think of that at all. I thought more of the responsibility.
Yes,
I think the firstborn is the one, and maybe it's sort of just the other side of the picture.
It is.
That the firstborn is the one that ultimately, when there are problems like with parents or whatever.
That's what she said, lead her siblings. Drive my parents crazy and lead my siblings. And that's what you're talking, lead, right? The one, you are the go-to person, the responsibility, right.
I just learned from a very good psychologist that that all of the research about siblings is pointing to that sibling relationships are formed by the firstborn child more than they are the experience with the parents.
The parents.
Interesting.
Really? Mm. So the character of the firstborn.
Didn't know that.
Yeah, right. So the character of the firstborn determines to a greater extent.
Than the character
way,
of the parents.
The way that
other
siblings relate to people.
Showing,
and
so who knows? Uh-huh.
Well, another interesting aspect, I being also firstborn too, is that like the Kohen, the firstborn, at least in my case, absorbs the blows and the anger
of the
parents, Hashem, and then you know,
they mellow out.
The lesser tribes don't get the anger and the.
That's a good point too, Marla.
Yeah, right.
Well, the parents are less experienced, so they do all the stuff, trying it
make
out,
all the
see what works, what doesn't work.
Mm-hmm.
Pay more attention because you're first,
mm-hmm.
less attention as you go down the road.
Well, that's why Rabbi Moshe Dov Stein, Alav HaShalom, Shalom, who used to teach. He was the Rosh Kollel at Shaar Yashuv Yeshiva in New York. And he taught a special halacha class to judges and lawyers. So my husband was in that halacha class. And they discussed, how do you work out a will today when the halacha is that the firstborn male, if the firstborn is a male,
they get
double inheritance. And that's the halacha. So really, a Jewish lawyer should not write a will for somebody
like giving everything
equally, because the halacha is the firstborn gets double. So he said, why does the firstborn get double? He said, probably it's schar limud, it's tuition. That the parents have to pay that kid tuition. They get their inheritance fees, plus they get the tuition for teaching the parents how to be parents, because they do absorb so much, and it is such a rough ride to be the firstborn. Mm-hmm. Other reasons,
I was
too.
Gonna say, there are other reasons.
There's other reasons, too. And he actually, just for the FYI part, he actually said it's possible that, I mean, he did go through the halachic ways to allow that to happen, that you could give the person double, but you can also cause them to inherit debt from their siblings, so that they have to pay that out to them.
To make it all equal.
But he said, really, that is thwarting the halacha. You're following halacha, but you're thwarting the meaning, the desire of it, and so possibly that shouldn't be done. We'll leave that to the judges and lawyers and the halachicists. But the point of all that is, why would they inherit twice? It's because of the responsibility. Right, that they are responsible for the rest of the family. It is to keep something together of the estate, but also to empower the eldest, who has the power, to be the strength and support of the rest. So that is the job of the firstborn, is to lead the siblings, and is to take responsibility, and is to be the buffer, is to be the mediator between parent and siblings.
So you're just seeing a multiple aspect, basically, of the Kohanim's responsibilities.
Well, let's start with the Jews.
Okay.
That's our role, each and every one of us, vis-a-vis the other kids. Right? All the other nations are Hashem's other children. We're the firstborn. So we're not physically first, but we're spiritually first in that role of firstborn. It's our job to take responsibility. It's our job to lead the way. It's our job to drive our father a little bit nuts, which we do, kiviyachol, you know, but which means as if we could. But we are the ones who mutcher the most, who bother the most, who create the, I mean, we're the difficult child, and yet we're the ones who are the leaders, who are the organizers, who show the way, who are the ones and to mediate between the will of the parent in heaven and the rest of the family, of everybody on earth. So that's our role. So that's our role as a nation. Each and every one of us serves that role. And then within us, in order for us to get that, we also have a chosen group within the chosen group, and that's the Kohanim. Mm-hmm. And that's part of the reason for that, is to drive home the point to us that there is a concept of subjugation, there is a concept of putting somebody first, there is a concept of giving extra honor and according that to somebody, and it's not by birth order. It's by chosen order. And it's interesting that Kohanim, as we'll see next time when we do 274, a Kohen with a blemish cannot serve in the temple. Right? Not 274, it's 275. That's the mitzvah of 275, that a Kohen with a blemishing defect should not serve at the sanctuary. However, they're still a Kohen and they still get all these rights. The fact that they can't serve doesn't mean that any of these rights are taken from them. So, however, that being said, it's interesting, and this is where Pirkei Avot, and I run on our paper, 6-6 comes in. Where did I put my sitter? Left it in the bag. We have this crown of kahuna. It's called Keter Kahuna. Can anybody else think of other Keters that are out there that you've heard of? Or Keser? You may have heard it as Keser.
Well, there's the keter that's the top of the tree of life, the sphirot, that's the highest.
Uh-huh, it's the highest sphere.
Yeah.
So, right. Mm-hmm. What else? Where else do we use the word keter? I guess I didn't keep that place. I kept a different place. Mincha Shabbos, it's in Pirkei Avos, chapter 3, chapter 6. Okay. Mishnah 6. Okay, there's three crowns. The crowns that we talk about are the crowns of Torah, kingship, and priesthood. Keter Malchut, Keter Kehuna, Keter Torah. There's
Say
also
again.
Keter Kehuna,
right.
Keter Malchut, Keter Torah. There's a fourth Keter, and that's Keter Shem Tov, Keser Shem Tov, which you'll see a lot in yeshiva dinners, Keser Shem Tov Award, right? So it's interesting to think about. Let's start here for a second. So Pirkei Avot, Chapter 6, Mishnah 6, Torah is even greater than priesthood or royalty, for royalty is acquired along with 30 prerogatives, and the priesthood with 24. But the Torah is acquired by means of 48 qualities, which are... So this is where you get the 48 ways to wisdom, is in this Mishnah. And it lists the 48 ways that you acquire the Torah. But here it's discussing an earlier place where it says that there's three main crowns. But there's really the fourth. It says there's Keter Kehuna, Keter Malchut, Keter Torah, V'Keser Shem Tov Ole Al Kulam. Keser Shem Tov is above all of them. So let's look at these four crowns, right? So we have the Keter Kehuna. That's just by birth, right? You get that by being born a Kohen. You have Keter Malchut. That's also only acquirable by birth, but it's only if you get it.
Right.
Right. It's not everybody born into the tribe of Judah gets to be the, well, Judah separated down into David, right? So not every descendant of David is a king, right? So it's only the kings that get their Keter Malchut. So that's also by birth and then by position. So you don't get to pick. Both of those are outside of your realm of choice. Right? Whereas Keter Torah, which is considered by this Mishnah greater than the other two, is only by acquisition. Right?
By your acts.
You have to behave in a way that you acquire Torah. That's the only way you can get that Keter. But that Keter is available.
You say earned?
Earn, yeah. Right. You have to earn it. The only way you can get it is by earning it. Right? So, and it's available to anyone. Or is it? Does everyone have the capacity to learn Torah?
No.
No.
Yeah.
Not everyone does. So it's not available to everyone. So what is that fair? Because we do have the concept that everyone can enter into a relationship with Hashem. Everyone can take control over their own destiny to whatever extent they can, which is where the Keter Shem Tov comes in.
Oh, that's not the alternative, but it's something that absolutely everybody can have.
Absolutely everyone can have.
So
because the Keser Shem Tov is available to every single person on whatever level they're on, right? The simple person, the brilliant person, the handicapped person, the whatever you are, the poor person, the wealthy person, the person with ants in their pants, the person with a lot of zitzfleisch, you know, whoever you are, you can acquire a Keser Shem Tov. And it has to do with using
your
who
actions.
You are to the best that you can. Mm-hmm. So that's about, so that's why that is above all of them, really. So but the Keter Torah is a very strong one, and it's strong enough that it trumps the Keter Kehuna halachically in some cases. So an Am Haaretz Kohen has to step back for a Talmud Chacham Mamzer.
Hmm.
Right? So somebody who is of
really?
The worst birth and somebody who is a very high birth, but it depending on what they've accomplished, the accomplishment trumps the birth.
So that just really reinforces that it's our actions and behavior.
Correct.
As throughout our lives that really, 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 above all.
Right. Right. That's what it is. Right.
Our relationship with Hashem as well as with other people.
Right. It's our relationship, but it's also who we are, what we make out of ourselves. Because really, in the end, all we're about is making something out of ourselves. Right? So what can we...
To the extent of each of our abilities.
Right. So all we can't change our birth order. We can't change our birth group. We can't change, you know, if we were chosen for a certain position. But we can change how much Torah we acquire. But if we're not smart enough to even change that, we can at least take responsibility for how we behave with what we have. And that's how we acquire the Keser Shem Tov. So, yeah, it is all about how we behave and how we deal with what we have been given.
But we also, like Rabbi Tarfon said, we cannot absolve ourselves from the responsibility. At whatever level we are,
Of course not.
We are ordained, if you will, to study, to learn, to cleave. We cannot reject it out of hand.
Correct, yeah. But it depends on who you are.
Well, I mean, that's...
I mean, you have the intellect to be able to do that.
But it's the journey of every Jew to do that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that responsibility
is inside
of them. But to the
extent of their ability.
But to the extent that they can.
But I guess I'm getting at is that not everybody accepts that responsibility.
Oh, that's right. For sure.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
For sure, and that's their problem.
Yeah.
right? I mean, that they're going to have to reckon with that.
At some point, yeah.
Yeah, I'm going to hear Richard Dawkins tonight. I have an extra ticket if anybody wants to go with me to Boulder. Just to know your enemy. He's one of the biggest Mahti et Arabim that there is today. Richard Dawkins is a preeminent, I guess, biologist, but also anti-theist. Not just an atheist.
Right.
He has a whole
an anti.
He has a TED talk on militant atheism. And he believes passionately that religion is what's wrong with the world. And that we need to act, we need to work proactively to eliminate it from the world.
Well,
you could see, you could see, but I mean, look, that's obviously not my position, clearly. But you could see how a person in a course of thinking.
I definitely can see it.
Could, I mean, if you look back.
If you don't have access to Judaism, if you don't have access to this.
But
inner circle and deeper understanding of Judaism, then the rest of religion is all narishkeit. That's the truth.
If you look back
almost
at what religion has wrought over the centuries,
I
mean, my gosh.
Absolutely.
You know,
no, I totally agree.
Not very pretty.
What it's rocking right now.
Right.
Well, for sure, but I'm just saying, I mean, let's just say if we sort of put that on, but I mean, if you just look at the
I totally agree.
So, I mean, it's not how I feel, but I could see how somebody could
I can see how many people can see that, and I understand all the pontificators that
I've
had the not privilege to watch on YouTube with some of my children, and this, and I see how they tear apart biblical sources and whatever it is because they're reading it literally instead of with Jewish understanding. But I can see that if you don't have that Jewish understanding, how one of my kids says the quickest path to atheism is reading the Bible. So I can understand
you can learn
that.
So much from your children.
Yes.
I carried this thing with me and back on where we were with this. This I got this off of Rabbi Plishkin's, and this is sometimes attributed to different people, but it's Rabbi Yisrael Salanter said, on Judgment Day, I will not be afraid of the question, why I was not great like Moses. The question I need to keep in mind is why I was not everything the Yisrael Salanter could have been.
Yeah, I've heard that before, that's really, you know, talking
about us being responsible for using all that we have been given by Hashem.
I think that's a very good thing to remember always.
Right. Yeah.
So, yes, you're right. It's true a lot of people don't take responsibility for that. I think that's one of the things that Stephen Covey really tried hard to teach from, I mean, from, I guess, nourished from a religious perspective, but tried to teach in a secular world that we are about our choices, that nature is, influences us and nurture influences us, but who we are is our choice. So that's this. Okay, so then the concept of being Mekadesh, the Zera Aharon, right, just for the fact that they are the seed of Aaron, that they are the Kohanim, is for us to get that deeper message that there is such a thing as chosenness, and they're chosen among us, and we have to be in that service. So that a mitzvah, you know, each act of service, I was just speaking with somebody who said, it really bothers me that God created us to be his servants. You know, like, what does God mean? I don't know this phone yet. I learned
their new phone.
Here's
huh?
a new word that I learned recently. It's called brick.
Brick?
Yes. When you brick a phone, that's when you make it as valuable as a brick. Right? So that's when somebody tries to redo the operating system of your phone and they brick it. And they come and they say, I bricked your phone. I'm
that
like, what does
messed
that
it up.
Mean? He says, well, it means right now it's as valuable as a brick. Fortunately, Abba had an old phone, so the SIM card got transferred, but I still haven't figured out how to use it. I don't know how to turn off the sound
yet. Remember when you got your phone last
year. Right. So hopefully I'll be getting a new phone that I will learn how to use properly, but I don't want to invest all the time in a temporary. Anyway, where was I holding? Let's see.
There is the chosenness within a chosen.
Oh, right. Okay, so the servants, right. So I was speaking to this person, so it really bothers him that Hashem made us to be his servants. So so obviously, we all know Hashem doesn't need our service, right? So what's with the serving, right? Why does Hashem need that, want that, ask that from us? Why did he set up a world that needs us to engage in it? So we, who have learned longer and a little deeper, understand that it's about our engagement. So I explained it to that person, which they didn't get it yet, but that when they do something kind to invest in the relationship, it's not just that they did the nice thing for that person and hope the relationship will become stronger because of the nice thing, but because they did it. Right? They did it for the investment. The act of doing it transforms them and makes them a stronger partner in that relationship. So that's really what it's about, is us engaging in the act of serving strengthens us, not that God needs it. So then why did God make a world where stuff is needed to be done? So that we can engage in it. So again, God doesn't need our service. He doesn't need servants. He's just fine without us. He'll be just fine again without us. But it's all about the kindness that he's offering to us to expand ourselves through these pathways. So in terms of us getting the chosenness, it's about us learning to respect. Everything is all an exercise in stretching us. Everything. The whole reason that we have parents. We didn't have to have parents. We could have just all emerged from the ground. We could all be Cabbage Patch Kids. You know, we could have all just emerged from the ground and then started walking and then start doing all these mitzvahs. We didn't have to have parents. But Hashem put a mitzvah in the Torah of honoring parents, and so therefore gave us parents to honor, because we need the exercise of being in relationship with a parent so that we can learn about being in relationship with Hashem. Right? And there's so many different types of relationships with parents. And I think it's to round out the whole experience. None of us has the definitive relationship. It's interesting, in Eshet Chayil, there is some controversy in feminist circles over Eshet Chayil. Should you say it? Should you not say it? Is it too much to expect of a woman? That a woman of valor just has to be someone who does all of that? Is it possible?
All those ships,
yeah. Right? And yet at the end, our sages tell us where it says, Rabot banot asu chayil, many women have accomplished valor, va'at alita kolena, but you're above them all. But many women is, no one woman can do everything on this list. This is a many women list. This is what women of valor do. These things.
You just pulled a big brick off my head.
Nobody can do it all. But nobody can have the whole relationship.
Right.
It's all of us doing it together. These 613 mitzvot cannot be kept. There is no one Jew on the planet who could possibly. Some are just for a Kohen Gadol. Some are just for a judge. Some are just for women. Some are just for men. Some are just for a lady. Some are just, you know, for
just
mourners. Just if you live in the land, right? No one Jew can keep them all. It is a collective effort. So that's one reason why we have so many different types of parents, right? It's to create a well-rounded picture of relationship with parents and how one might deal with it, to create many avenues to explore that relationship and to work on that relationship among us all. So among us all, we all need the relationship of dealing with somebody who's chosen for us to practice giving that honor over to somebody else, and to bring ourselves to a not a lower place, but a more humble place. And then among the Kohanim, they have the Kohen Gadol. You know, so the Kohen Gadol.
So they have. It's a hierarchy.
Right, so there's a hierarchy
well.
There too.
Mm-hmm. But isn't there some part of this that's all sort of just humility too? You know, no matter what, they're just going to be people in front of us. You know, sort of. And God is just.
Sorry.
Let's brick it.
No. I don't want to brick it. I'm powering it off.
You don't know how to turn the sound off.
I don't know how to turn the sound off yet, but I know how to turn it off, so I'm doing that.
Jeez. I think brick means break.
It does. Because it was brick.
Just in case you didn't know, huh?
But it just, it sort of strikes me as. This is just a fact of life. You may not like it.
That there's somebody ahead of you.
That there's someone ahead of
yes.
us. And it just sort of teaches us some level of humility,
yeah.
too.
Yeah, that's definitely there, too. Yeah. Yes, you're not the end-all, be-all. You're not on top of the world. Maybe God's chosen people. Maybe the leader.
You're still not at the top.
You should know you're not the tip-top.
Uh-huh.
You're not. The Kohanim have to carry that, and they have to figure out what to do with it. And they're known for a hot temper. And a little bit of pompousness there. I mean, as character trait, which goes together. A hot temper and pompousness goes together, because you get angry when your expectations are not met. Because, do you know who I am? You know, that should be met. I just heard about a student who took a test, And she went way over the time limit. And the teacher said, you know, your test is going to be disqualified. There was a proctor. And he keeps writing and writing. An hour later, goes up and the proctor says, you know, I'm not your blue book. And the student says, do you know who I am? And the proctor says, no, I don't. And I don't really care. So the student takes his blue book, sticks it in the middle of the pile, and says, good. And he leaves.
That is so funny.
Right. So, anyway, when you expect people to treat you differently because of who you are, you need somebody to knock you down. One of my kids, in a pompous moment, said, Ima, I know I need somebody to take me down a few pegs. I just don't know anybody who could do it. That's teenagers. Okay. So with that, let's just quickly look at 270 and 271, just as conceptually here. That a Kohen should not make himself ritually unclean over any dead person. And at 71, let's see, 70, that he shouldn't
go into
that, that a Kohen shouldn't go into any tent, meaning under any roof of any dead person. So a Kohen's not allowed to go into a hospital or into a cemetery. Or even stand under a tree, that's the tent, right? Under a tree branch that over that also the other side overhangs a grave. Right. So why is that? Because we just learned earlier, and I'll have to remind you back to the before the summer, that a regular Kohen is allowed. They have to be careful of Tuma and Tara. They're not allowed to become Tamei Meit. A regular Kohen cannot go into a hospital, cemetery, etc. Except for one of their relatives, so for their wife, their son, their daughter, their mother, their father, their brother,
sister, or brother,
their brother, right? Their brother, but not their married sister, their unmarried sister.
Okay.
Whatever, for whatever reason, I don't fully understand that, but that's who they can be defiled for, and they're all permitted, right? Because it says in the halacha, they're human beings. They should be. While they do have to separate themselves and be much more careful than the regular Jew. These are their close relatives. They're allowed to pour out their heart and cry for them. They're allowed to be in mourning, and they're allowed to, because when you become Tameh, you take a step back from your relationship with Hashem. There is something that's separating you. So they are allowed to become Tameh as human beings for that reason there. But the Kohen Gadol is not.
Never.
He's not. Not even for his mother, not even for his wife, not even for not. They're not permitted. So that's a very difficult thing. They can't at all, ever, go into a building with a dead person, and they can't
make hospitals.
No. A Kohen is not allowed to go into hospital altogether unless they need for treatment, and then they don't have the choice. But they're not allowed to go in to visit somebody or no. And in Israel, they have a sign on the door that says when there's a dead body and when there's not in the hospital. And I think they have the maternity ward in a separate area so that you could go give birth, and a Kohen can give birth. You don't want a Kohen to be born tummy mate, right? So that they could go and
be born
and be visited. But the sign on the front of the hospital door will say, entrance to Kohanim today is, and then you can flip it, permitted, forbidden.
Mm. So just go back for one second. The Kohen includes a woman in this case.
No.
No, if a woman is
given birth, she might give birth to a boy.
She meant be born. She meant be born. Yeah, yeah.
No, no. Let's say she gives birth to a boy. You don't want the boy, Kohen, to be born Tamei Meit into a hospital. Like the inside the womb, even if the mother goes into the hospital, the baby does not become Tamei. But as soon as that baby's born, they're outside the mother, and now inside the hospital, if in that same hospital building there is a corpse, that baby becomes Tamei Meit right away, as soon as they're born.
Well, you can't prevent that in this country.
No, you can't. No.
That's well, how many Kohen Gadol do we have right
now? No, so you can't, but we have Kohanim. No, but we have Kohanim in this country. A Kohen also isn't supposed to. Mm-hmm. Right, regular Kohen is not supposed to become Tamei Meit except over those
for
relatives.
His close family.
So, right, so going into a hospital for a regular Kohen today is not permitted. So
except
if they need treatment. I don't know what a Kohen does when his wife is in the hospital or for birth. He might not
Esther
go.
Might know. Rabbi Tversky Olajon told us that there's Tomei all over.
Right.
And so
everywhere.
Right.
So
you Tomei Meit already.
So get over it.
So there's no state of
so get over it.
It's all unclean.
After
the destruction of the temple.
You're in a state of uncleanness.
Yeah.
Right. So Cohen would go into a hospital today, or
my husband has visited other people in the hospital.
Right. So, I mean, I'm sure there's different answers for different people. There are some coining the... I mean, I remember once a mother arranging carpool. One of the children in the carpool was a Kohen. And the route of the carpool drove under a bridge between hospitals. And they had to reroute it because that child should not go under that bridge. No, it was in this country. But I'm just saying that there is care. So whether the kid's probably going to become tummy mate anyway. But the thing is, still, Kohenim are very careful today because it just maintains a sense of care too. I have another friend who's a Kohen who was on the bus from Jerusalem to Masada, but that bus goes through the Mount of Olives to get there, which is one big cemetery. So you're driving through the whole cemetery. So, but he asked everybody to raise the windows on the bus as they went through, and everybody complied. Like, there is a knowledge that a Kohen you protect. So that is part of this, that you want to give that protection, and the Kohenim hold the knowledge, at least the tiny drop of attention to Tuman Tara that's left for us today without a temple. They're the ones who hold it. We, by the way, also hold a piece of it, and when we wash our hands for bread, because that attention to Tuman Tara is not required during temple times of washing your hands for bread every single time. You're either Tame or Tahor, whenever you're eating. And people who are more conscious, they would wash their hands for even eating wet fruit. Some people still do that today. We do that at the Seder. When we dip our karpas, it's wet, and water transfers to us, so we wash our hands first before we eat something wet. Some people do that year-round, but not most. But the fact that we wash our hands is just a placeholder, a national, we've taken on as a nation, a placeholder for the awareness of Tuman Tahara in our lives.
But you are supposed to wash before you dunk your Chips Ahoy in milk.
Same thing.
Right.
Huh. Right?
Because of the...
Because of the dipping.
So I think it is that there is, we are all in a state of impurity anyway, period. But then it's just a fence, I think. And,
yes.
You know, and how we go about, and are we going to say, oh, whatever, Kohen or not, I'm just going to forget about that thing because it's not relevant? No.
We
figure out ways. So now if a baby is born in a hospital, and...
A Kohen baby boy.
Right, Kohen baby boy, specifically.
Then does he have to be careful? I don't know. That's...
Well, the whole thing is, okay, say there is a dead mm-hmm. body.
They're born tummy mate, so then
okay,
what?
So... Do they have to wait until they're older to, like, cleanse and purify themselves?
They can't until there's a temple. No, there's no way to get rid of tumat meat.
So once you are, you're...
Once you are, you are.
Okay.
But you're still careful not to...
So that's worse.
Right. To make
it go out
to
of
exacerbate
way.
It.
Yeah.
Right.
To exacerbate
right.
It.
Yeah. So there's different levels.
Apparently.
Levels within levels. It's
maybe.
So, but there's still the care. Yeah. People still take care. So why, then, does a Kohen Gadol is not permitted at all whatsoever? So it's because the regular Kohen is seen as human. You have emotions. Pour your heart out over your loss. The Kohen Gadol is told, yes, you're human, but your job is transcendence.
That has to be everything.
You have
everything.
To be transcendent. You can't have those emotions. The emotions themselves cut you off, right? Sadness will stop nevuah. Right, stops a connection. So you're not permitted to even have the Kohen. So the Kohenim have to separate themselves a little from the nation, but the Kohen Gadol has to even separate themselves from the Kohenim. They have to be the paradigm of transcendence, above and beyond the feelings of others, above and beyond the behavior of others, that there has to be an example for what it means to really use this world appropriately.
Could they maybe have come off in past years, and maybe even current years, as maybe a little aloof, maybe a little removed from people, because if you're cutting off some emotion,
yeah,
it's going to affect.
Say for sure.
Oh, I think so.
Absolutely,
I think so.
I would think.
It sounds like the Akeda to me.
Giving up.
Well, so
on such
God
a deep
says
level.
This is what you have to do.
Yes.
So you just do it.
And this is it.
You just
like,
do it.
Yes. Kohen Gadol. Yeah. Think about who that person is anyway.
What?
And so...
So they could come across, though, to the Amharet as maybe...
But see, I don't even think we can imagine what it was like to have somebody...
Something.
I don't think we can imagine what it was like to have somebody at that
right.
elevated
that level.
And yet, he had to marry.
He had to marry.
He had to marry, and he had to have children. Right?
But he couldn't...
I'm not sure.
If he had to have children.
I'm not positive. Well, I guess I'll have to look into that.
Be fruitful and multiply, but I mean...
Oh, right. No, he would have the mitzvah, but let's say for whatever reason...
He didn't have children.
Let's say his wife couldn't. If he was sterile, he couldn't be the Kohen Gadol, because that would be a moon.
Right, but how...
But how would you know?
How do you know, right?
How hard that must be to separate yourself, in a sense, from your wife, from your family, and maintain this sort of transcendent... feeling all the time.
Right, so that's what it's saying here is that if you really understand this world, and if you really understand that all of our human relationships are only there to serve as a parable and learning for our relationship with God, and that really our human relationships, how long will they last? You know, what are they, 90 years? That's all you get.
Maybe.
Right, maybe. Right, that's it. And then that human relationship, as close as it was with your mother, with your spouse, with your sibling, with whoever it is, it's over. And there is something left over in the early years of Olam Haba, but in the end, that falls away, because who we are, our personality, our sense of self, all that is a construct. So all of that leaves us, which means all of the relationships too are all through the construct that we will shed. Mm-hmm. That's all the garment of the soul.
All that's gone.
So all of it is about you and God, and this world is all about you growing yourself, you and God. So if you really deeply get that, then yes, you may have to hold back yourself from emotions, but you're supposed to be transcending, and you're supposed to see in the end it actually doesn't matter. It's actually not that sad.
Mm-hmm. And it's interesting too that like the idea is for all of this is for the man, right? It's not for the woman. They're not asking women.
Right, that's true.
To not attend the funeral.
That's true.
Or go to the hospital.
Of a child.
Right.
Because we all know, with all due respect to that, but we all know, you know, who's going to leave the family? Is it the man or the woman?
Right.
So we already know how that sort of works. Mm-hmm. And this is not a mitzvah for the wife of the Kohen Gadol. It's just for the Kohen Gadol.
Correct.
So I think it's also has something to do. I mean, the Kohen Gadol still doesn't give life.
Right, that's true. But I think your analogy to the Akedah is very apt. Because one thing I learned this year about the Akedah, the first test of Abraham was Lech Lecha, leave your past. And the last test is kill your future, give up your future. So really he's being told transcend and live only in the now, with no sense of past and no sense of future, which are all constructs anyway, and don't really exist in the ultimate reality. Mm-hmm. And so he was being told that really a Jew lives beyond past and beyond future,
which is
in transcendence with Hashem.
I think that's something, you know, that concept of not living in the past and not living for the future is something that I think, for myself anyway, that I have worked very hard to try to work on. And I mean, it's very difficult. I don't even begin to. But I mean, I think that's a very, very hard thing for any of us.
Yeah, it is.
You know? You're not like anticipating what's going to happen now. You're trying to do the best that you can or whatever right now.
Right. And if you can do that from a spiritual point of view, then you're connecting with Hashem, because Hashem is only right now. There is no past and there is no future for Hashem. Hashem is above time. So Hashem is always
present.
Is always the is. See, our present doesn't actually exist.
Right.
Because we are only, our present is only that split second between past and future. So the second that we're in the present, it's the past. Mm-hmm. Right? So for us, present isn't really there. So where are we living? Do we live in the future?
Do we
live in
the past? If you take that too far, then I mean, it seems to me that if you were a particular person and you took that concept to its ultimate, you would say, then nothing matters.
You could say that. However, the religious way to look at it, and I learned this from Rabbi Steinberg this summer, the religious way to look at it is, what is here and now? The only way you can live in the present is to connect to Hashem, because he's the only thing that is present. Because our life is either gone or hasn't yet happened. So the only amount of present that we can accomplish is attachment straight up, not linear. It has to be vertical attachment.
So
and that's when we accomplish reality. He's not a composite of past. No, he is not at all. He's totally transcendent of that. So exists completely beyond that.
Does that
he created past, present, and future?
True.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. But because he created time as a construct for to help us understand things, and so, but Hashem is completely above that. So Hashem always is, always was, always will be, but isn't always. So the only way we can accomplish existence is by that vertical connection, because really our life is either was or it hasn't yet been. So and that's
so
all.
Really
yeah. So the only way that
present.
We can achieve
You're
right.
Saying
that's
really
correct.
Isn't even any
there
present.
Is no present.
So the concept of living in the present is sort of a misnomer.
Right. It can. We can live in the present as long as we live vertically.
But that's not really present.
Yes. Vertically is present. Vertically
that
connecting to Hashem.
We have the unique ability to accomplish a lot in a very short.
No. Vertically is the only present that is.
Think about this.
Yes, think about it. Mm. Ponder that, mm-hmm. but think about that, that the past and the future don't actually exist, and that the present, for whatever it is, it doesn't either. We can't really accomplish present except in connecting to Hashem, who's always present. So that's how we try to use. So the anticipation that we have would only be, how can I connect further? How can I fix the past?
Not how can I connect later today or whatever.
No, how can I connect deeper? How can I connect higher? Right. How can I make my life more vertical rather than horizontal? And use the horizontal to make it vertical. That's really what it's about. So I'll leave you with that thought to ponder until next week. And yeah, have a terrific week thinking about how to live in the present and connect to that which is always present.
Cool.